Hi, and welcome to the RPG Academy's Show and Tell. Show and Tell is a show where we like to bring on someone in the RPG space and talk about something cool they're working on. I'm Mo, and today we're talking to Spencer Campbell, designer of Slayers.
Hi, I'm Spencer Campbell. I publish under the name Gila RPGs. Little bit about me. I'm a game designer out of Chicago. I'm a professor of psychology by trade and then game designer at night. And one of those games that I've designed is Slayers. It's actually one of my first games. It holds a very near and dear place in my heart. Slayers is a game of monster hunters in a city that is cursed to expand infinitely towards the horizon. Every session, the players will move to a new district, which are little microcosms, new little worlds, to hunt a monster. The cool thing about Slayers is that every class mechanically plays differently from one another. So it's like a series of little micro games that are going on when you're fighting monsters, as opposed to everyone using the same core mechanic.
Nice. And that's what got me excited about talking about your game, because I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. We're going to talk about Slayers, but before we get into it, why did you feel possessed to design TTRPGs?
Why did I do this to myself? That's a really fair question. I started doing TTRPG design in about 2019, 2020. I had been doing some design before that for a few years with a buddy of mine. We were trying to do board game and card game design, and that was nightmarish to do because of how complex it is to design something like a board game or a card game, just from prototyping alone. It's a lot easier to prototype and put together an RPG than it is a card game or something that has a lot of physical components. And in board games and card games, you have to really worry about things like balance. And I come from the school of thought that balance is unnecessary in RPGs. And so I found it a lot easier to design things in RPGs as a result. So yeah, 2020 is when I kicked off doing the design stuff. I released my first thing early 2020, pandemic happened. And then I said, well, I guess I have a lot of time on my hands. I'm a professor. And so I was doing a lot of teaching from home, which was kind of soul sucking. That wasn't particularly fulfilling, but it did give me a lot of time to sit around and think about games and think about rules and write a whole lot. And so it was one of those things where I used the pandemic as an opportunity to try a new craft, and it kind of took off.
The pandemic, the blessing, the curse.
Yeah.
So I love the asynchronous notion of Slayers, but let's just start from the beginning. If I'm going to be playing in Slayers, what kind of vibes am I going to be getting? What kind of feels am I getting from this game?
You're getting feels of sort of like, I sort of imagine this, the city, the place that this takes place in, as sort of it's a fantasy setting that is sort of like right on the cusp of maybe having some sort of industrial revolution. The kind of the fun thing is that the city is cursed, like I said, to expand infinitely towards the horizon. So it just keeps getting bigger. And all these little neighborhoods, what are called districts in the game, pop up. And these districts have wildly different feels to them. I live in Chicago, and Chicago is made up of tons and tons of different neighborhoods. And as you move from one neighborhood to the next, it can just be from one block to the next. You just suddenly feel like you are in a different place. And it's really, really cool. And architecture change, food changes, the colors of the buildings change in such fun ways. And so I try to capture that with Slayers. So it is taking place in a city, but that city can just take so many different forms. There's a bunch of different forms that are in the game that you can use, but I encourage GMs to sort of borrow from what is inspiring to them about an urban environment and bring that into the space. That was one of the fun things about making the Slayers Almanac. It's a little supplement with 10 more districts. I didn't write any of them. I asked people from around the world to write a district inspired by where they're from and their culture and everything. And it's just super, super cool. So broadly, yes, it's going to be a city space. It's going to be fantasy. It's going to be sort of like that, not quite industrial, like steampunk feel, like a little bit before that, but really wide space for you to play around in terms of like, what is your little microcosm you're going to play in that night?
Cool. Like, that's so evocative and sexy and kind of like, it really almost gives a not the role-playing game, but like the TV genre, a monster of the week kind of feel, you know, that yes. Like you have these episodic adventures that just kind of cohere because of the mythos of the city. That's pretty cool. So let's talk about what the player engagement experience is. The idea of these like individual mini games that affect the greater game sounds so compelling to me. How does that even work?
So that was the tricky thing to figure out. The impetus for making Slayers is that I was working on two separate games that weren't making very much progress. One was a gunslinger game where you were managing these six dice as your bullets, which would eventually become the gunslinger class in Slayers. Mm-hmm. And then a fighting game based off of like 2D fighters like Street Fighter and Tekken and things like that, that was all about combos and exploding dice. And I wasn't really making enough progress with either. And I just thought in desperation, can I just smash these together somehow? Can I somehow make this work? And it all comes down, it took a while to figure out, but it all comes down to basically, no matter how many dice you're rolling or what size those dice are, so D4, D6, D8, whatever, as long as the result is a 4 or above, you've succeeded on whatever it is that you're trying to do, be it a skill that you're activating or an attack action of some kind or whatever actions that your class is capable of doing. That's the success. That frees it up for classes to have very different numbers of dice that they're rolling, different size dice that they're rolling, different ways that they're rolling the dice. Because all that matters at the end of the day is that you're looking for that 4 or above on these things to see like, I've done the thing. And so as a result, I got to play around and make these classes that could play with dice in different ways. So the fun thing for me was thinking about, all right, well, across different board games and things like that, what are some fun mechanics that I see in terms of how dice are used? Or across role-playing games. So exploding dice, like I mentioned, the gunslinger's six dice that you are constantly loading and unloading from the gun. So it's resource management. Mm-hmm. There's an element of push your luck, which is a mechanic I love in a lot of my board games, my favorite board games, that's the Arcanist. And that tactician is my favorite way to play a support class, which is just roll a giant pile of dice and then just start swapping those dice around whoever is rolling throughout the fight. Turning successes into failures, failures into successes. You're like a conductor of the orchestra of the fight. And it was a lot of fun just thinking about, well, what's another weird way you can roll dice or mess with dice? Or what's a different size dice? And how can we play with that, knowing that, you know, a D8 has a lot more opportunities for success on 4+ than a D4 does, where you only have one side that works. It was really a fun, creative opportunity to just think about how dice can be rolled and messed with.
So I almost feel like sometimes when you're making character classes or playbooks, you're almost selling something, you know. How are you like appealing each one of these to a different player?
Yeah, the goal when thinking about how to appeal these to the players is I like to have a punchy little descriptor paragraph that says, here's what the thing is, here's what the vibe of this class is, play this if you want this sort of experience, and then mechanically having things that reinforce that experience, making it clear. And part of that is, and this is the thing I talk a lot about when I think about Slayers, is these classes, because they're so different from one another, have different levels of complexity to them. There's different amounts of cognitive load that are required of the individual depending on the class, which also frees it up to say, hey, you can get a group of people together who want to play an RPG who maybe have different preferences on how crunchy or complicated they want their character class to feel. And you can all sit down and play the same game because one person can take that slightly more crunchy, calculate-y class, and the other person can take something that's a little bit more laid back. They're a little bit more passive in the fight. They don't have to be rolling as much or thinking about that stuff.
Right.
And I wanted that to be an opportunity for people to see as well, where they go, oh, okay, this class just purely looks simpler than the others. Mm-hmm. And that appeals to me. Or you go, oh, I don't like that. I want the one that's got way more widgets and levers and buttons for me to be messing with because I want stuff to do. Mm. And so that's a big part of how you pitch the classes to the players, is how much stuff is this class going to have you do, and how much do you have to be thinking while you're playing in the game, as opposed to maybe getting to take a little bit more of a backseat.
You mentioned board games. Have you ever played a board game called Dice Throne?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's out of frame over there. I got them all.
I'm feeling a bit of Dice Throne vibes with your RPG. That's awesome. It's a family at my house. A favorite at my house.
Love Dice Throne so much. It's so good.
So I'm getting the vibes that you got a game that is much more spotlight focused than like power level focused. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, in terms of this game, in terms of how we do things like advancement, like your characters getting stronger, or just like their relative strength compared to things that they're fighting, the slayers, the player characters, are pretty capable from the get-go at doing things. So it's not about how much can we scale the power of these classes as they get stronger and stronger and stronger, but instead, how can we shine a cool spotlight on each of these classes, which is really good at doing one particular thing, and let them just like, boom, here's me doing the thing that I'm so good at. Like the Blade class has this exploding dice mechanic, and they're really good at single target damage. And so when you're in a fight and you're like whittling away the little mobs so that it's just the big boss that you're fighting, the Blade gets to step and go, now's my time to shine. And it's a really cool opportunity for them to do that, as opposed to, I'm finally strong enough that I can do this stuff. No, you were strong enough the whole time. You'll get stronger. There's advancement, but you are very good at these particular things. And so the hunt is about finding opportunities to allow all of those classes to do that thing really, really well.
Nice. Where'd you get these ideas? It sounds like this is the Spencer Campbell system. and do they show up in any of your other games?
So that's the thing, is so there's one other game that this stuff shows up in, which is Drifters, which is a Slayer's hack, but it's in a Weird West setting. So it's the same concept of the asymmetrical classes. But it's, everybody has these weird Voidborn guns and they all talk to you, but they all roll very differently and things like that. So that was the only place where I kind of really recaptured the same vibe of this. This really was sort of an isolated love letter to a lot of my favorite genres of RPGs and board games, and bringing them together in one sort of patchwork game, essentially. I don't think, at least off the top of my head, I don't think it really shows up very much in a lot of my later stuff in terms of these very hyper specialized, this is the thing that you do that nobody else does sort of thing. I do love flavorful classes, like in Nova, which is my sci-fi mech game. Like, you choose which mech you want to be, and that mech is very good at a particular thing, but mechanically everybody's doing the same stuff. Everyone's doing either rolling dice the same way or doing some sort of resource management the same way. The real asymmetry showed up in Slayers and kind of lived in Slayers alone from my catalog. Unless I'm forgetting something. I don't know. I've done this a while. It is possible that I've forgotten something. I think it's in just Slayers.
It's all good. How do you support GMs when they come to this, especially dealing with like these different players playing different mini games?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I, you know, like many RPGs, I've got that GM section, which is where I kind of put my personalized advice for the game in there. And there's a few things to note. One is, because there's all these different classes, I tell the GM explicitly, you're not responsible for knowing how any of these classes work. Mm. The players are responsible for knowing how their class works. But the thing is, that's the only thing that they need to know. Because their class is this little box, their own little thing, they need to understand how it works. And as long as they do, cool. They're good, they're set, and everything like that. The GM purely just needs to be able to paint the scenes for those players to activate those little boxes, to open them up and go, oh, cool, now my class can go play in this space. So that's one thing I say right away is, hey, there's a lot of unique things going on. It would be really hard or absurd for you to try to have to know how to do all of that stuff. On top of that, like, Slayers has a ridiculous amount of third-party support out there. There's tons and tons of classes that other people have made, which then just reinforces my belief that the GM should not know how all these classes work.
Right,
but it's
right,
like,
right,
hey,
right, right.
I want to play this cool third-party class I found. The GM will go, great, as long as you're the expert in it, I'll trust you when we get into a fight and you say this is how your mechanics work. So that's one thing that I say right away. Another thing that I point out in a lot of my games is I, generally speaking, don't believe in balanced fights in combat. This is just a thing that I believe in. I don't like, I've never been somebody who likes looking at challenge rating numbers and making sure that it matches up with the levels of my because I'm the forever GM. So I'm always thinking about what is this fight going to look like? And the reality of the world is nobody would ever fight fair. Nobody would ever, right. ever want to fight right. a fair fight. You would fight a fight if you knew you were going to win. And so if you're hunting monsters, those monsters are going to fight you when they feel like they can win. And you're going to want to fight them when you feel like you can win. And so that's the thing that I kind of reinforce to the GM is, I'm not going to give you explicit advice about how many different enemies and different levels of enemies that you should be deploying against these slayers, because nobody is going to go into this with a fair fight. I do give advice on, like, hey, here's how you sort of test the waters to see like how people respond, but, and like, don't just explicitly try to kill the PCs immediately, unless that's your jam at your table. But like, that's a thing that I talk about in a lot of my games is, I don't believe fights are ever fair. Otherwise people wouldn't pursue them. And so in our games, they wouldn't be either. The other thing in terms of GM support is that there's just lots of stuff for the GM to use as inspiration. There are a number of different districts in the book that you can use as, hey, here's a list of NPCs, rumors, locations within this little microcosm. We want to do a hunt in the, you know, in Slayer's Row, which is just like a place where the Slayers can't come and hang out between sessions and stuff like that. And let's have a monster hunt there. Here's the places that are there. Here's the rumors. Here's the NPCs that might be there, so that you have a little cheat sheet that you can use to pull up. Obviously, there's a bunch of different monsters in the game in terms of stat blocks that you can use. And on top of that, there are three complete hunts in the book. So what you would kind of consider to be like quests or adventures in other games. So
right.
they sort of follow three act structures, which oftentimes helps GMs understand pacing, especially if you're trying to pace it out for like a one shot or like a two shot or a three shot. You can go, oh, we'll do one act every night or something like that. And so they give you kind of a little bit more of an on rails experience, but it can be a helpful experience for some folks to say like, hey, this is a new system. Let's just follow through with a storyline that will kind of take us from beginning to end of hunting this particular monster.
Interesting. Yeah, you answered my next question was, is there a monster manual? Like, how many monsters are you giving people? And are these monsters more like traditional monsters? Are they giant rats? Are they like, where are you getting your kind of mythos stuff from?
Yeah, it's there's a bunch of monsters at the end of the book, and there's like 30 to 40 different monsters there that you can throw at the PCs in any combination. You know, it's going to be your standard non-threatening enemies that are like little bandits and stuff like that, all the way up to some pretty giant terrifying monsters so that you can kind of scale things accordingly. You know, in terms of inspiration, there's going to be a lot of things that I think people who play fantasy games might expect to see, but then there is the fact that it is in a city or an urban environment, and so these monsters would adapt to being in an urban environment as well. So like, yeah, there's a troll, but like there's no, at least in my head, there's not like a lot of bridges that the troll would be under. So it's like it takes its toll in alleyways. It's an alley troll. And so it like morphs its body to sort of fit the cobblestones of the streets. And it creates barriers and walls to stop you from moving through the city in easy ways. And so there's that element of, yeah, there's going to be some familiar fantasy tropes, but there's going to be also some that have that reinterpretation of, well, what would these things suddenly act like if they were trapped in a city setting as opposed to being out in the woods or mountains or something like that?
I love how trolls immediately evoke bridges.
right. It's immediately to my head. And I was like, there's probably bridges, but there's a lot more alleys than there are bridges. So I think the trolls would become the keepers of the alleys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This sounds so interesting and cool. I stumbled upon you when I missed my local game meetup, and everybody was shouting on the Discord about having played this cool game called Slayers. And so I'm looking forward to checking it out. If people wanted to kind of get a sense of how Players works, are there any APs in the world?
There are a few APs. I think I have them linked on the game's page on Itch, where people can get the PDF version of it. I think I've linked the APs that I'm aware of on that page.
Gotcha.
There are some that were played like on stream, so there's video formats. Then I think there's a few just purely audio podcasts that I've linked there as well. I don't recall the specifics off the top of my head, but I think I've got a few linked there.
Nice. If people wanted to support you or anything, should they go to like what's the plan?
Yeah, the catch-all place is going to be gilarpgs.com, gilarpgs.com. That's my website that has links to like my Itch page, but it also has links to my Shopify page, which is where you can get like the physical copies. Physical copies always come with PDFs, so if you're like me and you like to have the book in your hands, that's, you know, you still get the digital version. That's the best place to go, just because it has links to those two places where you can find the games, and then to various socials. So it's where you can find the link to my Discord server and my Twitter account and my YouTube channel and stuff like that. So that's sort of the aggregate place.
Nice. And do you social? Is that a place people should follow you?
So I do post on Twitter, essentially, is the only place, but my posting is pretty pulled back. I made the decision last September, October to like really reduce my social media online time because it was just destroying me mentally. And so I post on Twitter, but I pretty much just post game updates and promo stuff. So, you know, it is a good place to see what I'm up to, but I also don't post very frequently. So you almost have to like look for what I'm posting, as opposed to it won't be on your feed all the time. Right. So there's also a mailing list where like once a month I'll send the big updates. So if you're not a social media person, but you like to keep updated, the Discord is a place where if you can kind of lurk, or I'll send out that once a month mailing list.
Nice. Awesome to hear. I have it on good authority. Slayers is a pretty awesome game, and it sounds like it's doing some weird, cool, interesting things. You know, I think we have a bunch of listeners who, you know, they love the fantasy stuff, and you know, they're often looking to try something new. And I know we do a lot of coming on Kickstarters. This is a game that's in the world. It's done. you know, there's a community around of people who are playing it. And those kind of games have a whole, like, you know, different benefit.
Yeah. And like you said, there is a really cool community. Like it's linked on the Itch page. I was blown away with how many people made really cool third party stuff. So there's just classes and districts and all sorts of things that people just went wild with. And people, I say this all the time, people are infinitely more creative at coming up with stuff for my games than I am. So I release the base thing. And then I watch people go, oh, well, what did you think about doing this with dice? And it always blows my mind. So there's a lot of cool stuff out there.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, I invite my audience to feel free to join the community. But I'm going to say thank you so much, Spencer, for joining us for Show and Tell. And we look forward to hearing more stuff about what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the RPG Academy podcast. We do this show out of love for the hobby and the desire to be ambassadors, welcoming more people into this community. All of our website content will always be free to use and utilize. But there are expenses related to the show, and if you enjoy what we do here, then please consider supporting us in some way. You can do so as simply as rating or reviewing us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon or DriveThruRPG, consider using our affiliate links first, and then we'll get a small percentage sent back to us. You can do a single direct donation through PayPal using the paypal.me/theRPGAcademy, or consider joining our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/theRPGAcademy. And for a donation as low as $1 a month, you'll get access to lots of extra goodies, including bonus minisodes, invites to monthly one-shot games, one-sheet adventures, and more. Please consider following us on Twitter and Facebook, or join our Discord, where we like to try to keep the conversation going with our fans as best we can, and are always looking to talk and chat more. Or do none of that. Just continue to listen and enjoy our show, because honestly, that's enough. Thanks, and remember, if you're having fun, you're doing it right. We'll see you next time. The music used for our intro and outro is Fly a Kite by Spectacular Sound Productions, used under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.